Hey, good evening. We are live tonight on our new network that we have joined with, Things Network. And we are going to be doing this at 5 o'clock on Friday nights now, from now on. And tonight we are with Buddy Thayer from Ocean State Paranormal. How you doing tonight, buddy?
Good, good. Nice to be with you guys. How are you guys doing tonight down there and out there in Wisconsin?
Well, it's a little chilly, a little on the chilly side, but you know, we're here, we're surviving. It's not, we don't have any snow on the ground yet.
Yeah, I got knocked on wood because I can't stand snow. I'm anticipating it day by day here in New England. So,
We got it already. Oh, but it didn't last long.
Yeah, we did get a little bit of dusting, but that was about it.
Yeah, so it's
hey, Jeremy, how you doing, bud? Looks like Jeremy's
popping in,
saying hi.
You know, you knew I was going to make it. I just talked to you earlier. So, what have you been up to?
I'm a paranormal investigator, so I investigate residential cases here in Rhode Island, nearby Massachusetts and Connecticut. I donate my time to local charitable organizations to help them raise money. Nothing as of late. I did a few historical organizations here in Rhode Island over the last few years. I've helped raise money for the Varnum Memorial Armory Museum and the East Greenwich Historical Society Museum. Other than that, you know, I'm a ghost guy. I did a podcast for 2 years myself, of which Jeremy York was a guest on our show. I since stopped doing that, and honestly, it's given me a lot more time to pursue. The paranormal, investigating the paranormal, and school, and I'm a full-time student, and you know, all that stuff. So, work, go to school.
That's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, buddy, there is a question I usually ask everybody. So it can kind of get familiarized and new viewers, old viewers, whatever. That way, it kind of answers questions that are, you know, the beginning part of it for them. What got you started into the paranormal?
Ooh, that's a good one. So I had experiences when I was a kid that I didn't necessarily relate to the paranormal, but I knew when it happened, and it was scary at the time. And then when I was later in my teens, we used to go out looking for it. Some people have called it legend tripping. We'd go to here in Rhode Island, we have the Mercy Brown vampire legend. A woman was, she died when she was 16, and she died of tuberculosis. And because her body survived some kind of process of, you know, that happens after death, they believe that she was a vampire, and they believe she infected her siblings with this. So they dug her up. They cut her heart out. They put it on a nearby rock. They burned it. They used the ashes to make an elixir that they fed to the brother, and anticipating that the brother would be broken by this magical vampire spell. Anyway, so I go to places like that and look for it for years and could never find it. Never had any more interactions with what I thought was maybe paranormal. So I grew into my 20s, and I started working in group homes. I was working in a group home for boys in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. It's an old mill village in Rhode Island. And people would tell, I would work, I picked up the one, I needed a full-time shift. I had just gotten married. I needed full-time benefits. I picked up the full-time shift in this group home. It was a third shift. I had usually worked first or second shift in this home. I had never worked third shift. I had never worked third shift before. People would tell me ghost stories, and I'm like, I don't want to hear that. I'm working here alone. I would tell them it's all in your head. I was the biggest skeptic ever. And then I started working there, and subtly things started happening that I couldn't explain. Like, for example, basement had a television. It was a playroom. That would come on at 2 o'clock in the morning. It wouldn't just come on. It would come on as loud as could be. So you run downstairs, you turn the TV off. What else would happen? You'd hear footsteps going upstairs. You'd hear footsteps out in the other room. You'd hear motion sensors go off. You'd feel cold spots where you wouldn't feel cold spots. And I felt that feeling, that uncomfortable, that awkward feeling, like somebody right behind me all the time. Like there was, it was always that paranoid feeling. So after a while, I had an experience. I would see stuff out of the corner of my eye, but I never saw anything. And I would always tell myself, buddy, it's just like, it's, you're here at night, you're here by yourself, people are telling you these stories, you're buying into it. Just, it was this, it could have been that, it could have been something, it could have been anything. I would tell myself it was everything but. So one night, I had come back from, I had gotten married, I was out for a week. I come back on my honeymoon. Now, this would happen, this stuff would happen like sporadically. Sometimes it was like every night for a week. Sometimes it was like, it wouldn't happen for 2 months. Sometimes it would happen 1 week and not happen the next. It was never predictable. So I come back from my honeymoon. I worked a day, and then nothing happened. I went back the next day. It was a Tuesday night. I worked 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. It was about 4 a.m. I'm emptying the dishwasher. So the dishwasher's in the kitchen, obviously. And it's a big kitchen. It has four bedrooms off of it and a bathroom. This is a group home for boys ages 4 to 12. A lot of these kids had incontinent issues, so they would get up in the night. They'd be wet. You'd have to change them, shower them, put them back to bed, keep it quiet, all that stuff. All these kids had motion sensors on their beds. So when they moved in their beds, when they decided to sit up, like they were getting up, the motion sensor would go off, alarming the staff in this kitchen area that one of the kids were moving, was getting up. So I was at the dishwasher. I'm standing up at the dishwasher. About 2 feet behind me is this bedroom. It had three boys in it, and there was a bathroom adjacent to me. I hear the doo-doo, doo-doo. I turned around, and I saw a figure walking out of this room. I addressed the figure as one of the kids that lived in the room because he was about the same height. I'm like, hey, Russ, you got to use the bathroom. He comes out. The figure comes right out, walks right out, walks right in front of my face, and disappears. I grabbed that countertop. Gentlemen, I have never been so terrified in my entire life. I froze. I knew what I had just seen. Everything I had believed in the last like year or two had completely, it was gone. I had just seen a figure walk out of this room, walk right in front of my face and disappear. So that terrified me. Staff came in that morning. I told them what I saw, and they're like, hey, you finally had an experience. Like, no, I don't want to. I'm like, I wrote it all. I wrote down every experience I had there after that. And then after a while, it started becoming like not that I was scared. It was just uncomfortable because you don't know when it's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how scary right. It's going to be. You don't know what it is. You don't know if it's you. You don't know if it's like the demon in Hollywood movies that's going to take over your soul. So I finally broke down, and I said something to the team leader, the house manager. Her name was Carrie. She was a clinician. She's a master level licensed social worker. This is not one of the highest licensures in the state. So by me saying I'm going to this woman for a meeting to tell her about my experiences, and the whole time in the back of my mind I'm thinking, this lady's going to think you're nuts, and she can commit you right here.
You're going to lock your ass up in a rubber room.
So I go in there, and I start talking. I'm like, I want a different shift. I'm like, there's going to be a shift available, first shift, second shift. She's like, no. I'm like, what about at the other houses? What about at the boys' house, at the Pasco boys' house? What about at the girls' house? No, we have nothing available. She's like, you're on the only shift that was open. And I'm like, ah. Like, I gotta switch somehow. I gotta get. She's like, what's wrong? She's like, you were doing so good. Everything's good. Yeah, everything's great. But I don't know how to tell you this. And then I told her. And then she, not only did she not like, wow, you're nuts, and I'm gonna call the people in the white jackets, but she related her own stories to me about like being in the living room and like, hey, how you doing? And having a man whistle at her and say, hey, baby, to her. And she ran out of the house, and she's like, you know, since that day, I refuse to be in the house by myself. I'm like, oh. She's like, you got to talk to this woman, Leslie, who was the other overnight worker. So she's like, she's had a lot of experiences with this person she related to. And, she's like, you should talk to her about how to deal with it. Cause she's dealt with it for years, and everybody knows about this. Everybody's talked about this. I'm like, yeah, I just didn't want to like, I didn't want to accept it. So now that I'm finally willing and accepting to believe that there is something beyond life itself after we die as a spirit, I go and I talk to this woman, Leslie, who's probably about 20, 30 years older than I am. She owns a house in Chebachet, which you guys have no idea where that is, but that's in a little small town in Rhode Island. And she's had experiences at her house for 20 years. So I'm like, Leslie, so funny question. I'm like, so these stories that you guys have been telling me for like months now, say I actually like believe them. And not only did I believe them, but maybe I had some of the same experiences. What would you recommend that I do? She's like, have you seen the lady? I'm like, what? She's like, did you see the lady? The lady going up and down the stairs, the lady walking out in the Florida room. No, what I had seen was a shadow. I could see the arms swaying, the figure of the chest moving, the head, the whole nine, but it was more of a shadow figure walking out of this bedroom, where she would see a lady. So I'm like, I don't see people. I just saw a shadow, and then I experienced it. I went through the whole bevy of experiences with her. And she's like, you just got to talk to them. I'm like, what do you mean I got to talk to them? Like out loud? Like I got to say stuff? She's like, well, either you could do that or you could say it in your head. But she's like, they'll hear you. And if they're bothering you, just tell them to leave you alone. I'm like, really? She's like, yeah, just talk to them. I thought that that was the weirdest thing I had ever heard. I'm like, you make it sound more nuts now, anything less nuts. So me being a practical person, I was a history major in college. I got into psych, now I work in psychology, but I wanted to research the home. I wanted to do this practically. So I went to the local city hall. I researched the history. I found all the people that had ever lived in that house, and all of them were alive except for the first couple. The first couple was a couple that had immigrated to Rhode Island from Italy in 1920. The man was a carpenter. He built the house. The house was gorgeous. All woodwork on the inside, all nice handcrafted woodwork. They owned the home until 1939 at the tail end of the Depression. He had lost his job, and then they lost the mortgage on the house, and they lost the house. Within the next year, both of them died, and they're buried in the local cemetery, which is called Precious Blood Cemetery, also a reputedly haunted cemetery here in Rhode Island. And so I went out to their graves. I found their grave sites. I found what little obituary I could find on both of them. I went out and said a prayer, and I went to work that night. And I waited till about 2:30 in the morning, and I shut all the doors around in the kitchen, and I stood in the middle of that kitchen, and I'm like, Mr. and Mrs. Pirinunzi, that was their names, Pirinunzi. Like, you have a beautiful home, beautiful, beautifully built, beautifully crafted. I adore it, but I'm not here for you. I'm here for the children that are here, the children that are living here, and the safety of the children in this home. Please, I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear you. Leave me alone. From that point on, I worked there for another 4.5 months before I went and I worked at another location. I had never had another experience in that home ever again, which that kind of like made me be like, oh. About 5-6 months later, my grandmother passed away here in this house that I'm in now. And within days, we started having experiences. So my mother was living here at the time. She was terrified. So I was like, I'm like, you got to talk to her. Just talk. She's like, I'm not going to talk to her. She's like, that sounds nuts. I'm like, okay, so what do you want me to do? She's like, call in a team like those ghost hunters on TV. I'm like, okay. So I tried calling TAPS, and of course they were inundated with cases because they were on TV at the time. And then I called in another group, and they came in and they investigated, and they could collaborate with they had some of the same experiences we had. And that's the way it made you feel, you know, like, One, like, you're not crazy, like, it's not you. Two, that, like, not only am I not crazy and these experiences that I'm having are not crazy, but other people can come in and have these same experiences. And three, they can provide me with logical and very easily manageable ways of dealing with this. And after that, I joined that group, and then I founded Ocean State Paranormal in 2012, and I've been... I do a lot of residential cases. I do some historical cases. It just never gets old. It never stops making me be like, oh, wow, that was cool. You know, it never does. So,
yeah.
I'm sorry, I took that long question and I spun that off a 10-minute story.
No, that's fine. You know, everybody has a different story. Everybody has a different take on it. That's why I always ask.
Yep.
So
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying in your story though. I also noticed you were talking about doing residentials mm-hmm. or private. But you also were doing historical. Now, when you say historical, are you talking about like buildings that are known or have been reported as being haunted or areas that have been reported? Stuff like that?
Yes, absolutely. One of which, if you guys are familiar with the show Ghost Hunters, the team that emanated here out of Rhode Island, on one of their shows, they investigated the Providence City Hall, which is a beautifully crafted building in Providence, built in 1886, I think it was. And we were given the opportunity to investigate there. And that blew my mind. We have the Conjuring House here in Rhode Island. Of course, you guys are probably familiar with the Conjuring House.
I've heard of the Conjuring House.
As is anybody who has ever heard the word paranormal. So I have never investigated the Conjuring House. I could investigate the Conjuring House, but it's like nothing against the Conjuring House, nothing against Andrea Perrin or her father, Mr. Perrin, or the groups that have been involved there over the years. I feel like it's like almost like a money pit, you know, like they're doing mm-hmm. it. I'm sure, and God bless them, dude. I wish I had the money to invest that in that place. I would have done it for the money too, but not to say that it's not haunted. Probably is. But I don't know if it's everything that they say it is, for one, or I don't know. I don't know if I can connect myself to something like that. So,
yeah,
I'm not saying anything horrible.
There's a place around here like that.
there's a couple like of that. Places in Wisconsin that are that way.
Yeah, I just want nothing to do with, honestly. Yeah.
Well, basically what it happens is someone discovers it. Someone, you know. So early on, before it becomes famous, they discover that it's that way. They start doing investigations and stuff, and then it starts becoming known. And then the more known it gets, the more popular it gets. And then all of a sudden, somebody gets this light bulb because this whole country is based on capitalism. So somebody gets this freaking light bulb and says, "Hey, let's start charging people. Let's start." Saying is more of this or more of that, and then it becomes too commercialized. It's kind of like Christmas, man. It's too commercialized.
Yeah, it's like that. Well, think about it. There's the one that like there's the bar, that one bar. All right.
Oh, the one in Tennessee, there or Kentucky? Where is it down south?
And just think how much they advertise that it's haunted in this.
Yeah, there's one here in Wisconsin, in Baraboo, Wisconsin.
Trying to avoid giving them a bad rap on the show, but anyway.
I'm not giving them a bad rap. I'm just saying what town it was in.
Anyway, mm-hmm. you know, but, you know, that's a good way for a bar to make some more money. It's like, look how much more acceptable that the paranormal has become. You should mm-hmm. be back way back when, you know, you didn't talk about it. Or you locked up in a rubber room. You know, or they come for you.
Not necessarily get locked up
in a rubber room.
You know, if you had any kind of belief in it whenever you were younger and in school, especially with I'm about to age myself here, you know, back in the 80s whenever I was in school and everything. So, you know, at that point, if you showed any kind of belief in that, you were always kind of teased about it and always poked fun of.
Shunned.
You know, and shunned. And then, you know, after that, now, you fast forward to now, because of TAPS and others like Ghost Adventures and stuff like that, it has become more of a mainstream kind of situation where people are actually believing it more. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that that it's been glorified like it has through through the media and through through television. But for investigators like myself and Joe, I do it. I honestly do it to prove that something's there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll guarantee you, it doesn't matter. I will never get the same results twice. I can go out to a location and I can sit there all night and not have a damn thing happen.
Right.
Not have one single iota of anything. Noise, sound, a voice, disembodied voices, orbs, anything. I won't have a damn thing. Except for maybe the hoot of an owl or the bark of a dog.
Mm-hmm.
You know. A week and a half, 2 weeks later, you can go back to the same location and then run across the freaking spirit that's so chatty you can't even shut him up.
Right.
You know, something like that.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's kind of fun also when you debunk somebody else's stuff.
Yeah.
Because you know damn well that they're just in it for the glory and the fame. Yeah. Or 15 minutes of fame, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we did that. It was a popular place, and I always tell people, you know, when you go out, you want to know your surroundings, you know, everything about it, you know. And I used to live in the area, and we were watching the video, and this is a ghost crossing the yard. No, it was no ghost. It was just a person. In the middle of the night, probably walking to the only 24-hour store that was open from the neighborhood that sat behind the place. Mm-hmm. And you could cut through the woods through a trail. And so it's a shortcut. They were taking a shortcut to the only 24-hour store for probably cigarettes or God knows what.
Hmm.
Yeah, and the facility he's talking about it's about a 10-acre wooded park mm-hmm. in behind it, and it sits right in the middle of residence.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, and then on one side of it there's actually a really 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 and I mean really old cemetery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there are gravestones from mid 1800s in there. In fact, we actually went in and looked around and investigated, you know, did some taping in there too. And I found basically an entire family of mm-hmm. like kids, children,
yeah,
from mid 1800s. And I think it was five of them. I think there was like five different headstones, all children, because of the you know.
Yeah, we could never get into the building though.
But yeah, the building I haven't been able to get us into yet. I'm still trying. Because it's a state facility now.
It's a county and it's hard, facility.
Well, county facility. Still, it's hard to get into those. So
there's a lot of red tape that have to be and see they don't want you in the sensitive areas. And see, from what I understand in the building and the people that work there, because I knew somebody that used to work there, she's since retired. But they like go to the basement to smoke a cigarette or something in the winter time. And this used to be an old TB hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they saw a really old wheelchair in one of the hallways that were cut off. I mean, it's still a hallway, but it doesn't go anywhere because it used to go outside to some pool.
It used to go into tunnels. There were tunnels that went out. To therapy pools. And then further in the wooded area, there was also a pig farm. They had pigs in there, and they used that as therapy as well. And the tunnels used to go all the way back to those.
So the tunnels were primarily used for storage or different things. So this wheelchair was in this one tunnel that they were standing at the one end of, and they were smoking a cigarette, and all of a sudden it started rolling towards them. And they like ran back out of there, like, all right, we're done.
Yeah.
You know. And
yeah.
She found out that we were doing this. She told me the story one day and cornered me. But I could never get in the building, and she couldn't get us in there because of all the sensitive material. Yeah. And all the floors.
The whole thing is, I don't care about floors one through whatever. I want to get in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's what I want. I don't want to.
That's where everybody's seeing me. Yeah.
I want the basement.
That's where everybody's seeing the stories come out of, is the basement.
For this particular building, I actually talked to a phone service gentleman.
I remember that.
And he told me some stuff about that basement too, because all the switchboard and everything is in that basement that they have to go in there and work on it. And he said when you walk into the main lobby and walk into the main part of the building, you know, it's all bright, cheery. You don't feel anything. And he said to me, he said, when you have to go downstairs and you have to go, and as soon as you cross that threshold at the end of those stairs, it's like an ominous feeling comes over you. You want to get your job done and get the hell out of there as soon as you possibly can. He said that overwhelming.
So you guys talk about old insane asylum. This is really an asylum. It's more of a state farm. It was originally called the home for the feeble minded.
Feeble minded.
It turned into the Ladd School, and the Ladd School was a series of it's like a small village for people who were developmentally, intellectually disabled, initially to teach them farm equipment, how to farm, how to agriculture, how to grow their own food, how to repair farming equipment, stuff like that, irrigation, stuff like that. And then it eventually became the dumping ground for all the undesirables here in Rhode Island. So if you were like anywhere from like a petty thief to truancy issues to if you were like a bad girl, like if you slept, you were promiscuous before you were married, you were sent to the Ladd School. And then there were a whole bunch of reports of atrocities where they like raped and murdered patients, and patients were made as to be orderlies during World War II because of the shortage of people, and all sorts of like kids getting murdered and disappeared and dying, all sorts of atrocities. So this place closed down finally in 1986, and then it was ordered to close in 86, and then in 93 they finally took the last like 12 patients out and locked the doors. But when they did, they left everything how it was. So you talk about the wheelchair in the hallway. There were wheelchairs. There was patient equipment. There was like EKG machines, like just used. There was like the swing set was still up, which was really creepy. It was like the old seesaw. And this whole area was like, it was the size of like a small village. And so it was the piece of land that it was on sat next to the Exeter, the Veterans Cemetery here in Rhode Island. It was in the middle of the woods. It's in the middle of nowhere. And as kids, we would, not break in, but we would trespass, if you would, and or ghost hunt, if you would. And that's one of the places that we would venture off to and do that. So later on in, it was about November 2013, it was scheduled, the last two buildings were scheduled to be completely demolished the following winter. My best friend, he was, at the time, he was captain of a unit here in Rhode Island. He's a Rhode Island National Guard, and they had a training area in the middle for the Rhode Island National Guard. So he's like, he called the state police, told him he was planning a training, and he had some friends with him that like to take pictures of old buildings. So they said they can go in, they can explore, but they can't go beyond the first floor because it's falling apart, and they could, you know, I'm a big guy, I could fall through the floor like that and like kill myself. So I'm like, all right, that's cool. Mm-hmm. So we were allowed to investigate in two buildings, the first floor for both of them. The old hospital hallways, right, with the spray paint on the inside. There's like this brick and mortar on the floor. There's pieces of the wall, pieces of the ceiling all falling in, all caved in. We're the only people in this whole building. And I have six clear EVPs, male, female, clear as day, clear voices that are just like, I couldn't explain. And again, that's the place you drive on the ground. As soon as you come on the ground, you immediately feel that negativity, that like, I got to get out of here. That I want to hurt somebody. Anger that, you know, and then it fades when you leave. So it's still there now. It's still the grounds now. And I want to try and do experiments there now as with mediums if I can. It's just like, I hate it. It carries that It carries the land itself, just carries that negativity of all the awful stuff that happened there. So as an investigator, that's one of the things that I like to explore.
Anyway,
well, you had a guest ask about investigating a cemetery in Louisiana. I've never
been
to Louisiana once. I had the pleasure of going to New Orleans. It was absolutely beautiful. I would go again in a second. But we have a cemetery here in Rhode Island called the Elder Ballou Cemetery. It's in Cumberland, Rhode Island. It's not too old as far as cemeteries in Rhode Island go. It dates back to about the 1700s, but it's a very conservative Christian group. And I was in this cemetery. I'd investigated there about a dozen times. And I had gone there this morning. I was a Sunday morning. I had gotten out of work at Arbor Fuller Psychiatric Hospital, where I worked. And I needed something. I had some extra time that morning. So in this video that this I had made with this kid that we went there to investigate, he swore he saw the image of a man. It was a cemetery on a hill, and at the bottom of the hill was a road, and it was a stone wall. And the legend for the cemetery is a man in a gray suit, is often seen like guarding the cemetery. So he swore that this blotchy image in the graininess of the video was the gray man. I gotta go see that for myself. So I went and stood where we were standing, where we took the video. And I'm looking exactly at the stone, there's a giant stone in front of me. And just to the left of that is where this blurred image was. And it's a willow tree. It's a small willow bush. And it's gray. And I'm like, all right, we were moving. And that's exactly what that was. So I'm like, that case solved. So I'm like, I'm about to leave here. And I'm like, to myself, I want to like thank these people for allowing me to be here. So I say a little Our Father to myself. And make the sign of the cross. I'm like, thank you. And as I'm walking down the hill, I hear behind me, this is not a big cemetery at all. It's a hill, cemetery on a hill. And maybe 150 people buried there. From the top of the hill, you can see the whole cemetery. And as I'm walking back down that hill, I hear hello in a woman's voice. And then as the woman keeps talking, I hear a little kid laugh. So I stop and I'm like, all right, there must have been somebody back there I didn't see. So I turned around, I went back up over the hill. Looking at the whole cemetery, there's nobody. I'm the only person in this whole cemetery. I can see through the trees about a quarter mile down the road to the nearest house. There's nobody outside. There's nothing but woods. That instant moment, I'm like, I just heard a ghost. And like every muscle in my body just tensed right up real quick. And I'm like, okay, thank you for that. Thank you so much. And I ran out of that cemetery as quickly as I could. Get my guard off. But as an investigator, I have no courage when I'm by myself. So shit like that happens, and I'm like,
yeah, you wouldn't survive with me then, buddy.
With other people, it's fine.
Well, he said by himself.
I know. But you know, I myself, when we did our investigation at Bray Road, I took a stroll by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
you know,
and I do a lot of stuff. I can do a lot of stuff by myself. I'm too jaded. I've been involved in this stuff since I was like 13, 14 years old.
Okay.
And my mom was a sensitive. I'm a sensitive. I can sense spirits around me. I can see auras whenever I put myself in the right mind. Nice. You know, the stuff like that. And I've experienced way too much for way too long to be afraid of it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. When we have investigations, the first session of the night is called a quiet time session. We all break off. We all go to a separate area of the building, the house, the wherever we might be, and we sit for about 20 minutes and just take in what we're hearing, the natural sounds, the sounds of the building, the sounds of the pipes, the sound when somebody flushes the toilet, the sound of a car driving by. But then again, during those times, you hear things that are not necessarily explainable. So I do have that, like, I can do it, but, oh, my God, sometimes it's very uncomfortable. And I have way more courage with somebody else there with me.
That's because by yourself, all right, at night in a strange place, the mind tends to play tricks on you. You know, I mean, think about it. when you're driving down the road at night, late at night, you're by yourself, just you and the music or whatever, and all of a sudden you're seeing shadows along the road, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's the mind playing tricks on you.
Yep.
But then again, maybe not.
Maybe not.
But most of the time, it probably is.
I have to agree with Azariana there, though. I like being by myself whenever I do investigations because it tamps down on the possibility of contamination on EVPs. Because sure. If you're by yourself, you know that you're not that you don't have anybody else next to you, around you, mm-hmm. that you're going to pick up on if they start making noises or say anything.
That's true. That's a good point.
And of course, though, you know, me being the way I am too, I got to kind of watch it because that one time I was by myself and I had I provoked something and had five pieces of equipment subsequently fail on me.
Hmm. Okay, so provoking. Can we? How far do you guys provoke? How far will you go with the
provoking? I don't provoke nothing. It's just
Joe won't. I do. And mostly
there's a difference too between provoke. I use trigger questions. I use something that will trigger. Oh,
that's
a response.
One thing. No, he actually.
I'm not gonna be like, hey, go fuck you. I'm gonna be like that.
I actually call him out.
Yeah,
I will actually stand in the room that is considered to have the activity in it. And I will do this by myself, nobody else with me. And I will literally call it out. I'll be like, look, I want you over here now. I want you to get your ass in front of me. Talk to me. I want to know what you're thinking. I want to hear from you or something like that. You know, I will call out the spirit. I've done it. Well, I don't do it often. It just depends on how I feel at the moment.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
And a lot of times, you know, I do try to stick mostly with asking the questions rather mm-hmm. than saying no and being demanding. So basically, provoking is more me being aggressive and demanding towards any spirit that's in the room. And I honestly don't fear him.
He did that with it.
It's okay to be assertive, Mark. It's all right to demand that they come and talk to you. That's,
I know that, but it's just that for me, I don't fear. That's my
he
problem.
Did that with the
you know how you have the, you know how you have the supposed the fight or flight response.
Yep.
I don't have the flight response. I've never had that flight response. It's always stand my ground.
Now, see, he called out the beast, too, or what was whatever was following him in the cornfield that night.
Yeah, I did that, too.
Because we had it on thermal for a while.
Nice.
So, I would imagine being there in Rhode Island, though, that you would have all kinds of opportunities and places to go because of the fact that it is one of our oldest states.
Yep.
Being part of the New England territories, and that there's probably quite a bit of stuff attached to the land itself, not just buildings and historical buildings that are built there.
For sure. I have investigated houses where there were activity, and it was a brand new house. So at that point, I go and I look into the land history, and in one particular case, it was in. On the Warwick-Cranston border in Rhode Island, which it's about the middle of the country. Warwick's about almost as old as Rhode Island itself. Was founded about 1642, Rhode Island 1639. There was land that belonged to a Quaker man, and he was one of the big proponents in Rhode Island against slavery. Rhode Island at the time, of course, had slavery. We dealt slaves in the trickles out of Newport, Rhode Island, which was a major shipping port. And this guy ended up dying at sea, but in something like 1703, really early on. But the history of the land kind of played into, because they were seeing one of the reports was seeing a man in like 1700s clothing walking across the front yard often, and like this, you're not able to connect like a newer home. But you can't forget that here in Rhode Island, the land dates back. I mean, white settlers have been here since the 1630s, and before that, we've had a bevy of Native American tribes and warfare that occurred here before the whites even came here. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of good history here on Block Island, which is the island. It's if you go to the southern part of Rhode Island, you get on a ferry, you go across the Block Island Sound, which is part of the Atlantic Ocean. 13 miles out, there's this little teardrop-shaped island, and they have on the south part of the island, they have this beautiful overlook of these 50-foot cliffs. It's called Mohegan Bluffs, and it's called that because when the back in like the 1500s, when the Mohegans invaded the island, it was held by the Pequot tribe, who now own Foxwoods Casino there in Connecticut. They were pushed off the cliff by the Pequots and all fell to their deaths, and they named it Mohegan Bluffs. So I mean, stuff like that, stuff dating back that far, everything and in between. You know, here in Rhode Island, I've investigated at a location. It's called Smith Castle. It was built in the 1740s. The foundation was laid by Roger Williams, and he founded Rhode Island, and then he sold it to a gentleman by the name of Smith, who fortified the house, and it was the meeting point for, not that you guys know what, or your viewers might know what that is, but one of the greatest massacres during the King Philip's War, which is one of the Native American colonial wars here in Rhode Island and Massachusetts during, 1675. So yeah, I got to investigate that basement and sit against these giant like field stones that were laid by Roger Williams like 400 years ago. So the history is like, the connection is very cool. Yes,
definitely. I've often wanted to make my way out there and do some investigating. I actually did at the beginning of October get to go out to Maryland.
Oh, nice.
But that was actually for work. I didn't have any spare time to do any investigating or do anything out there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I know that there's a lot of history out in that area, lot of history along the East Coast there, because I mean, that's where our original 13 colonies were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of stuff in Newport. Like, you talk about Newport and the slaves, but I mean, a lot of like the Battle of Rhode Island took place in there when the British, during the Revolutionary War, the British invaded Newport in 1780, and there was a giant battle on the island, or the slavery that took place here in Rhode Island, or the anything that's happened here and there in between. You know, like I say, it's just, we've had the military here in Rhode Island, the Navy bases in Rhode Island, the stuff around that. It's everywhere. Honestly, I could there's a Navy ship called the USS Salem. It's actually up in Mass, but that's just another place. I could go back there a million times and experience something different every time I'm there. It's just it's unbelievable the amount of like places to investigate. I have a relationship with the Varner Memorial Armory Museum. It's in East Greenwich, Rhode Island, and I've investigated there 25, 30 times. And I mean, not every time you experience stuff like you say, but you know, sometimes it's like I've been in there by myself doing a tour, and it's you'll hear footsteps on the carpet and know you're the only person in the building.
Yeah.
Who was that, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, because sometimes you will get the same thing over and over again. That's most generally a residual haunting.
Mm.
But a lot of times you won't get nothing. And then 2-3 weeks later, again, you know, you go back and do another investigation, you'll get all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mostly because of that one being considered more of an intelligent haunting. But there are residual hauntings that only happen certain times of year and certain times of the day as well.
Yep.
And it's all because of how the energy was placed.
Sit there in the cemetery talking to yourself for 8 hours. Yeah. You know? Well, you know, 9 times out of 10, that's what it is, because you can't schedule an appointment with these things.
No, You can't.
Yeah.
So have you been to Salem?
I have been to Salem well over 100 times. I'm a really big history guy. I've been to like Gettysburg, Pennsylvania at least a dozen times, and not one time have I wanted to investigate. I'm there for the history, and that's about it. I mean, I might go and investigate next year. I'm supposed to go out there next summer for a Gettysburg battlefield pass. But we'll see what happens. But I mean, yes, I've been to Salem. I've been on a ghost tour in Salem. I can say that. But they walk you around to different like haunted locations. But the witch and the witchcraft thing that's behind all the history behind Salem. Honestly, if you sit down and you think about it for a minute, it was one person not liking another, and I want your farmland, and I'm going to make up this lie about you. And our over superstitious legal system is going to believe it because they're super like paranoid and conservative Christian, and they're just gonna like just murder people because that's how things happened in those days. I mean, they had the Spanish Inquisition for 200 years and murdered thousands and hundreds of thousands of Jews in Spain and Portugal. So I mean, it's something that's happened over the years. Now whether it's haunted or not, I would venture to say it's haunted. I've been to a few locations there where I felt the weird feelings. We had shown a few different spots that we could investigate there. But again, like the Conjuring House, like anywhere else in New England, it's like oversensitized with. Maybe it's whether it's the energy that people put into it or the actual event that caused the haunting itself. I don't know, but I mean, I could go to Salem, but it's not. Yeah, I guess it's on my backup list if I ever need a place to investigate. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I was just kind of wondering. I mean, for something like that, I mean, that was basically the central point of the witch hunts, from what history tells us.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you take a situation like that where you've got these paranoid, want to control everybody, men that would just accuse a woman of being a witch just because, or like you said, you've got farmland I want, right. You know, stuff like that. And you use that, you put that kind of a violent situation out there, that energy will stick. That energy
it's bad juju.
So, you know, that is a good, you know, thought to look at to see if possibly there would be something there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I would almost bet on it, to be honest with you. There's a location where they used to hang them from that I'd like to go to and investigate there, to be honest with you.
All over the land.
That hanging, was it in a gallows, or did they actually...
It was in a tree.
I remember hearing stories in about some of the trees that are the really, really old, like oaks and maples and stuff around there, to where they would possibly still around for.
They believe they might know the tree that was used that might be actually still be standing. Again, I'm not sure. This has come up recently in the last 10 years or so. So you're like, yeah, they're just kind of taking a guess maybe at this point. But Gallows Hill is definitely a place in Salem. And I'd like to, if I was to investigate, I would go there. There's another place that's a restaurant now that's reputedly seen a woman in the window on the second floor that I'd like to, you know, try out there. But Salem, where it actually happened, is not where it is now. So Salem, if you're a tourist and you go to Salem today, you go to Salem, Mass. You go down, there's a cobblestone marketplace down there. It's really cool. There's some really good restaurants. We have some really great chowder in Salem. you can get some really good Ipswich fried clams, which are really, Ipswich is the town over, but they have them in Salem. They're really good. We have some fine choices of beers, but the actual area that was Salem then is now Danvers, Massachusetts, and everybody goes to Salem because they want to experience the witchcraft and all the stuff that happened. But all the stuff that actually happened in Danvers up the road. But again, right. It's marketed, it's touristy, it's you're cashing in on everything that happened. Yep. It's a beautiful town, and a beautiful firework display, because you get, I went to a park, it was an old fort, and you see the fireworks from all three towns. It's absolutely phenomenal. But
sorry, he's got,
I don't know about there. The ghost so much.
Joe's got his ghost in behind him there. His diva came to say hi. So what's on your bucket list now? You got anything planned?
My bucket list. I have a spot on Block Island that I'm trying to return to. It's called the Hygieia House. It was a bed and breakfast for a number of years and an annex to an old hotel out there. We got to investigate there in 2013 and had tremendous, some of my best EVPs in 20 years of doing this. I'm trying to get back over there because it was recently bought and it's privately owned now. So Block Island's tough to get into places. Another place I'd like to get to, I don't know, those big institutions out in Pennsylvania and Western Virginia, with that Pennhurst Asylum. I guess that's on my list. I have a bunch of cases here that I want to get back to, because some of the things that we had, like at old, I had a banquet hall that I investigated in Cranston, and it's over 100 years old, and tremendous activity there on two of the three investigations we've been to so far. So my concern is getting back to the places I'm currently investigating, and the bucket list stuff. I mean, I guess that will come eventually. In Ireland, I'd like to get there eventually someday, I guess. Or I'd like to actually investigate at Gettysburg. I'd like to actually investigate at Antietam Battlefield in Maryland, but I got to be really respectful about it.
Right. What was that, Joe?
I said, that's what we all say about our bucket list, but they just keep getting longer.
Right.
You know, you keep finding things to add to it, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I'd like to get to Gettysburg, too. I mean, we got a guy that we know that's been there a lot. Not good at all.
He tries, I think he goes almost every year, doesn't he, Joe?
Yeah. He invited us along a couple of times, but it was just bad timing.
Yeah.
Yep. There's a bed and breakfast out there that I want to stay in. A friend of mine actually stays at. He goes out there once a year. He goes at the end of June. He's a historian from Rhode Island, and he's told me about it for years. He's like, you got to try and get in here, because he's like, I'll be sitting at the dining room table, and there'll be my plate and my two forks and my knife and my spoon, and my fork will just like move across the table like by itself. Like what happened? Stuff will move in my room, or I'll see a figure walk out of another room, and there'll be nobody there. And it's at the edge of the battlefield. I'm not sure the name of it. There's a few spots out there that I'd like to get to. Kadori House is another one right in the middle of the battlefield.
I bet that would be fun.
The Peach Orchard. I would like to do the Peach. Last time I was at Gettysburg, the only paranormal thing that I did in the whole, it was in the middle of the daytime. I hit record on my phone and I sang Dixieland walking through the peach orchard. So a little bit of a antagonistic, I guess. A lot of Union soldiers died there. It was actually one of the focal points of the second day of the battle. A lot of close to 40,000 men died in that field. But sing Dixieland and see if I get a response. I didn't get anything, but just stuff like that.
Yep. Well, like I said, sometimes you get responses, and sometimes you never get anything.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And that, if anything, I think that's what validates it, because it doesn't happen all the time.
Right.
Even with me seeing stuff, I don't see stuff all the time. I've seen figures from here from time to time. Sometimes I'm doing it, sometimes I'm not, and that's the other thing. Sometimes I'm not even investigating, and it just. They'll come and find me, you know. So,
that's the funniest thing is, you know, every one of us out there, or almost, I'd say probably 90% of us or more, have one of these.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the funny thing is we got that in our hand or our back pocket or for women purse or whatever. And when things happen, we don't think to grab that and bring up that camera and start recording right away.
Well, no, real quick, because we've only got like 5 minutes left. We got to keep the deadline now that we're
part of the things
networking. But that was like Grafton. I mean, when we were in that arts mall out in Grafton, Tom and I go down, you know, all the equipment was left upstairs. Nothing was taken with me. Tom and I were just going downstairs and out to have a smoke. Right. Until we got right past those lights, and that one just flickered, just the one flickered at both Tom and I. And it's like, where's the fucking camera when you need it? Or where it's like, we went back to that one room and the lights were on, but nobody had a camera or
anything. Well, that's because we were just down in that lower area at this particular place. And we did an EVP and some filming down there, me, my daughter, and Joe. And we came back up, and we turned the lights off downstairs. We had them completely off. The only lights that were on were in the bistro that they had left some of the lights on in the bistro to kind of keep it illuminated in there. So we went back up. We got up to the second floor, and then the other group was coming downstairs. Well, they ask us, they get a hold of us. They're like, hey, did you guys leave lights on down here? No, we turned them all off. So, you know, we turned these lights off, and yet here they come down and damn lights back on. You know, so stuff like that.
So. Yeah, that's weird. You can never explain it. That happened to me. It reminds me of a story a friend of mine told me from the Armory. He's like, I was in my office the whole time. I was looking in this other room. I knew the lights were out. He's like, yep, I was walking out and I saw the lights were on. And it's such a hard flick switch to flick. It's not, you can't just flick it. You have to turn the switch to make the light come on. So he's like, the scariest part of that was having to walk back in there and turn the light off because I knew it was off. Yeah, that's wicked scary, too. Knowing that you didn't turn it on. And
knowing you're not the one that did it. But yeah,
knowing you left and it was off and then you left around the corner and it was on. Yeah, that's scary as hell.
Oh Lord!
But that's how they get us, you know. That they do these. They have these little signs that they give us. Some of them are noticed. Some of them are not. And I don't know. You got to pay attention for this stuff. They're definitely out there, and they're definitely trying to talk to us.
Make sure you have equipment.
Whether we're listening or not. So.
All right, well, buddy, thank you for talking with us this evening. Yes, we've got about a minute and a half left, and Joe,
cool chatting with you guys.
You got anything to add or?
Yep.
Yeah, I know. Fortune State Paranormal has been fumbling around with a website for years. We don't yet have one, but you can find us on Facebook under Ocean State Paranormal. Me, Buddy Thayer, I'm on Ocean State Paranormal. I have a lot of my, some of my best video clips of evidence for the first like 6 years of Ocean State Paranormal. And they kind of teeters off a little bit. I have a few new ones on there lately. So you just look at our video page on our Ocean State Paranormal Facebook page, and you can see some of my good stuff. Some of the Block Island place that I mentioned tonight is on there.
That'd be really cool to check that out.
Yeah. Well,
thanks again, buddy. Joe?
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Next Friday, we're going to be back, same time, 5 p.m. Central. We'll have a guest then, too. I think it's, let's see, Mike Paranormal will be joining us. So that might be the whole team.
Okay. Nice. All right. Well,
to Jeremy York.
Thank
too, by
you
the way.
Again.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Jeremy, thank you. And just everybody, when you go do your investigations, stay healthy, stay happy, stay safe. And
remember, anything's possible.
Amen.